I'm your host, Brian Robertson. Welcome to the Optimus Roundtable Podcast, Episode 5 with Joey Wanuch. Cool. So, Joey Wanuch, welcome to the Optimus Podcast. Joey is a strength and conditioning coach at Optimus Health Group and head of performance at Preston Lions in NPL 3. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Just tell me a little bit about your background, mate, how you came to be at Optimus, and I'll probably press you a little bit about Preston Lions and that role later on in the podcast, but give us a background. Where did you study? How did you get to here?
Yeah, so I did my bachelor's in sports science at RMIT in Bundoora, so straight out of year 12. Always been keen on sports science and was very big on PE and biology. So I kind of always knew I was going to go down that health track. So I went straight into my bachelor's, smashed that out. Wasn't sure whether I was going to do maybe ex-phys or maybe go post-grad straight into physio or do something else. But I came across a course at ACU, the Masters in High Performance. And I've always been one to know a lot about everything without like specializing in one particular area, especially that early in my career. So I love like management in that sense. So I thought what a course is perfect for me. Ties in high performance stuff, and then you can look at a holistic picture of an entire program. So I really enjoyed that course. That was you do like a 1 month intensive and then the rest of it's online. So
how old were you when you started the masters?
I'm a weird one. So I started uni and I was still 17.
Wow.
Yeah, so because I'm born early in the year, I skipped a year.
Yeah.
So year 12 wasn't fun for me because all my mates were going out. They're not throwing away that much, but
had to get the fake ID.
Yeah. So I started uni when I was like 17, and then a month in, I turned 18.
Wow.
And then I smashed through, thankfully, didn't fail any subjects, so graduated with distinction, just quietly.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, so done. Straight through, I didn't want to repeat any subjects, didn't take a gap year, so what was that? So 2013, 2014, 2015, finish at the end of 2015, and then 2016, straight into my master's.
Wow, so 2 years. 21.
Yeah, so I'm
was 20... that daunting for a 21-year-old to undertake that masters and start to specialize?
Kind of, definitely, yeah. So when we had our intensive and I went and sat in a few of the tutorials and I was looking around, I'm like, geez, there's some pretty good coaches that I already look up to as mentors that are sitting this course.
Wow.
I'm like, this is pretty crazy. So
yeah,
obviously make the most of it. I networked a lot during that course and met some really great people. And the good thing about it is it wasn't just Melbourne based, it was national and like mostly some international coaches as well, but fantastic course. Definitely recommend it. If you're not keen on that ex-phys hospital kind of setting, you're not sure what to do for postgrad, awesome, loved it.
What did you do once you finished?
So from that, funnily enough, so during that master's course we had to do, in the final kind of year, I split it up into 6 months industry internship and then a 6 month like kind of research project. So I extended it a bit just to focus on one and the other. And during that internship, I did it with the guys at Revel Sports Academy at Rise High Performance. I learned a heap of stuff there. So give credit to all the guys there. Definitely learned majority of the athletic development stuff that I do at the moment from those guys. Which we'll touch on, we'll dive into a bit later. So that brought up a lot of opportunities coming out of there. From there, went into Eastern Rangers TAC Cup AFL footy as sports science, head of sports science there. Kind of brought my love into GPS, analytics and stuff like that. Always been keen on gym, but wanted to hound in on that load management side, which then brought up another opportunity to spend some time with Melbourne, so at Demons. Learned from one of the best load managers there. I'm not sure he's still there. Charlie. Yeah, showed me the ropes. Blew my mind on GPS stuff. So I thought I knew some things coming out of Eastern Rangers. First session with him, I was like, wow. So learned a heap of stuff from him. And then the opportunity came to switch codes after that. And I've always been into soccer, football, not heavily. So it was kind of daunting to kind of make that switch and go into a code that I don't know much about.
Were you born in Melbourne?
Yeah, so born in Melbourne.
Born into an AFL bubble. Right?
Literally AFL bubble. Entire family played AFL. No one played football.
Who did you barrack for?
The Pies. Okay, the Mighty Pies. Yeah.
He's got all his teeth. Which is weird.
Jesus, hard working in Richmond, I tell you what. It is. Yeah, and then so made that switch over because kind of the reason why I went to Preston was the opportunity to own my own program.
Yeah.
Which I wanted to do, obviously. Coming from a background, doing that master's course, getting a holistic kind of picture of what goes on in a performance program was what I wanted to achieve. So made that switch, took that plunge, had a very successful year at Preston, and credit to the coaches and committee there. Obviously, they bought in to everything I had to do, which made my life super, super easy. Obviously, if you go into, I don't know about you at Bentley and stuff, but whether the first time you went to Bentley, but I do feel like NPL and football here is definitely behind a little bit. There's definitely a niche that we can fill to get everyone up to standard over there. So I thought that would have been very, very challenging to go in and try sell myself and sell a program to achieve some results, but it actually wasn't. So if you have the coaches supporting you and the committee supporting you behind you, it makes life super easy. So that was awesome.
Fantastic. Mm. And you're working with Daniel Hanna over there as a physiotherapist.
Yeah, Dan's my right-hand man. Yeah. So me and Dan run the program down there at Preston. Awesome physio. Loves what I do and I love what he does. So he's very keen on S&C as well, which is perfect for a performance coach that has a physio that loves S&C and goes into it. It makes my life super easy. So we're not wrapping anyone in cotton wool. He does definitely push people in rehab, which is awesome. It's what you want to see. Yeah, we've worked very well together. Very well. We call ourselves the Dream Team, or we get called the Dream Team down there at Preston, from one person in particular. Won't name him.
Tell me a bit more about that and that the importance of working physio and S&C hand in hand, because obviously we do it here at Optimus.
Yeah.
Tell me about your experience of that, working with physios and physios working with S&C.
Yeah, so previously whenever I've had to work with some physios or hear a lot of stories of obviously S&Cs and physios not getting along and butting heads, I just feel like we kind of have to blur the lines a little bit in between where we can collaboratively like work together. Obviously, it's going to be that rehab space, so knowing when to shift and knowing physios, acute management, kind of mid-stage rehab when it comes to something, and then knowing when to handball off, being this is not my area anymore, time to return to sport, you need to start pumping some sport specific stuff, get strong, get fit, get powerful. That's kind of more the S&Cs I feel role there. But then again, I feel like S&Cs need to educate themselves on what physios do in that early stage. Same likewise, physios need to know what's going on in that end stage. And I feel like me and Dan did that very well in that first year. Obviously, both being new, was that both of us had first years at the club. So learning the whole time we were there, which kind of helped the process a bit as far as understanding what kind of Dan's focus are during rehab and what my focus are in that end stage. We just clicked. I don't know, I guess it might not happen for everyone, but it worked for us. So
yeah, that's good. Excellent. And then that kind of leads into working at Optimus. How have you found it? And particularly, I'm going to ask you about your progression-based stimulus
that
you've documented. But let me know, how does it feel being at Optimus and working at Optimus?
Yeah, so funnily, Dan sent me the job application for here. So an opportunity came to be as an S&C down at Optimus. And I knew Jake Leslie, who runs the program down here, S&Cs. Me and Jake did our level one together many years ago. So
wow.
I remember he gave me a lift home, so I thought he was a top bloke from that. So I knew Jake was at Optimus, and then Dan sent me a message saying, there's an opportunity there. Would you be interested? Maybe I thought about it, thought maybe this would be an awesome opportunity to upskill in rehab. And it definitely is paying off now. And then from that, Dan, I think you did Dan's rehab, didn't you? ACL
yeah,
rehab.
He ruptured his ACL.
Yeah.
And that kind of made him want to become a physio, I think.
Yeah.
Or maybe he just started his first year of physio when he ruptured his ACL.
Yeah, so he was telling me, Brian, awesome physio. You'll learn heaps from him. Runs good shit down there. Thought, you know what, may as well throw my application in. From now, I got an interview. Had a very casual chat with you and Jake. Loved the setup.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved the setup down there on Lord Street. And then from there, just progressed to where we are now.
Cool. And are you having fun?
Love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. Great atmosphere. Work with great people as well. And it's awesome seeing... The facilities are awesome as well. What we have access to is state-of-the-art. So it's definitely best practice.
What's your favourite piece of equipment at the moment?
At the moment, besides the assault bike, definitely... Like obviously the force decks,
yeah.
So much info we can get, and so much info we can use. More importantly, not just get. So a lot of info that we can base our programs on. So I do love screenings, especially for like athletic populations.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have the force decks when I got the Preston boys in, but we did jump on the force frame.
Yeah.
So that groin data we used straight away. So we implemented it in our IP programs, which was. Beforehand we'll be guessing, whereas now we're actually hitting targets specific. So
that's awesome, and that's one of the things that I feel like is really important for us, not guessing strength or weaknesses. And even if you think about doing say a one rep max back squat or a five rep max, you know, calf raises to fatigue, being able to assess the exact newtons of force that a muscle group or a muscle movement can produce, I feel like that's kind of a game changer in physio / SNC.
Definitely.
So yeah,
definitely.
I agree with you there. The force decks are my favorite. Interestingly, you said it's what you do with the data, and I've seen previously a lot of people and a lot of physios, a lot of SNCs will just do screening for the sake of screening.
Yeah.
But it's what you do with that data. What have you done, as an example, at Preston, getting really specific force frame data? And I'm assuming you probably did adductor and abductor strength testing, maybe a couple of ranges. What examples have you implemented? What things have you actually done based on that data?
Yeah, so I think we tested 60 and 45. I think it was both of those. So we had a look at the... force frame data, mostly obviously looking at asymmetries between left and right. So we had a couple of players who were very weak on like left adductors, so adduction going in, and also looked at ratios. But say we had one player in particular, probably about had a 20% asymmetry between left and right abduction. So obviously when we do our COPAs, he's doing an extra set. So yeah, an extra set of simple, like just Copenhagen adductor exercise, do 6 to 8 more reps each time from there, and then we'll test again and see whether we'll see whether we have improved on that specifically, and also looking at ratios. So the ratios from adduction to abduction. Funnily enough, we did have a couple of players that were stronger. Abducting, so rather than adducting coming in, which we don't really want to see.
Yeah. What are the ratios that you want to see in that adduction abduction?
It's more 1-to-1, more closer to that 1-to-1 ratio. So some were pretty skewed. Majority of the boys were around that 1-to-1. So from there, we know on to target, obviously, overall abductor strength. And so, yeah, they focus on we group our IP programs into more hamstring specific people. That and then groin specific, where they have to do an extra set or few extra accessory exercises.
All right, talk to me about this progression based stimulus. So, to give the listeners an overview, I was really impressed when Joey came on board and he's documented a significant amount of programs that I feel like I have toyed with and played with based on other programs, but you're the first person who's been able to document it so clearly, so concisely. And the thing that really got me was when Jake was doing a presentation and used your work around the progression-based stimuluses on, in particular, movements or, say, advanced movements, so maybe field-based movements or running or change of direction movements. And so to give the listeners an overview, it was about predictive movements, reactive movements, resisted movements, then perturbations to the movements, and then progressing structured into structured chaos, which to me, just seeing those five headings really struck a chord. And you know, I've been working on that vector force yep. rehab theory. I'm a big believer in sharing our content, and obviously, you know, crediting people where you've had inspiration, but this is your adapted program. Can you tell me a bit more about your progression-based stimulus, what it means to you, and how you see it maybe evolving with your clientele and your athletes?
Yeah, definitely. So I think as practitioners, we all kind of do this maybe in a common sense approach. So you see, like, similar to Lockie Wilmot's plyometric continuum, I feel I'm very systematic and I love processes and going on things, especially obviously within rehab, you kind of have to be. So credit to the guys. Majority of my learnings came from obviously my time spent at Red Bull Sports Academy with the Rise Health Group people. And they exposed me to a lot of that athletic development stuff, which they would have got from college, so US college, which is massive over there.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it is a kind of common sense approach where if we're teaching skill acquisition, how you expose that athlete to certain stimuluses to teach them from there. So obviously predictive movements being very simply athlete internally just cues themselves to when to do something. So we can kind of maybe just use an example, maybe like a wall drill. So a simple wall drill without you having to tell them, switch. So simple wall switches, let them drive it. So internally, they're cueing themselves what they need to do. And then, so that's kind of like your predictive movements, reactive movements, reacting to a certain stimulus, whether it's a clap of a hand or a whistle or yep, and then do something from there as an athletic movement. And then resisted movements. So you can, KP made a really good suggestion actually when we were talking about this. He was saying why resisted after reactive, why not resisted then reactive. I feel like if you can master reactive movements using body weight, then you can start to progress that afterwards and start to load those externally. So whether it's with bands during a lateral shuffle or added weight during certain exercises. So if you can master that reactive movement while using body weight, I think you have the motor control and motor capacity to then start loading it. From that, you go obviously resisted movements. So if you're still doing that wall drill, throw a band around their hips, get them in a certain position where they have to resist against an external load. For you, it might be against certain force vectors, whether it's a horizontal vector that they're working against. And then lastly, movements under perturbation. What that kind of means is throw some instability in there, see if they can handle that with some instability as far as, I guess, what you can do in that sense. A pallet press with a band, throw a weight in the middle of that band, punch the band out. You got to stabilize in that end range, so you're not just holding that isometrically. It's that instability as well that adds a bit of difficulty to it. And then at the end, structured real-time chaos. So can you do it within a drill? Obviously, it's still structured. So chaos being your kind of pinnacle chaos is obviously match intensity, complete randomness. You don't know what's going to happen. Whereas structured real-time chaos, you're within a drill. You can put rules and sets in place. You still have to move and there's still a bit of randomness to it, but it's controlled, obviously, and you can control it. So I think once you work through a certain skill set and progress them through those stages, I think you've kind of hit all angles as far as what you need to do. And obviously the beauty about it is you can progress, you can regress, and then you can apply this to pretty much everything. So we use like a fair amount of continuum stuff based on specifically what you want to use. So whether it's linear, lateral, multi-directional, jump and land stuff. So
it's absolutely fantastic, I think, to give people a structured program like this that they can maybe alter themselves and individualize for particular injuries or particular sports as well. So it's great, mate. It's absolutely fantastic. How did you get to documenting this? Because like you said before, you're very systemized, you like structure. How did the creation of this come about, and how have you fine-tuned it down on paper effectively?
Yeah, so I had to, I was doing a bit of work for a company called Sportstar Performance, and we're creating kind of like a coaching syllabus for our coaches to use for teaching on-field athletic development principles. So with that, we kind of needed, instead of being there doing practical sessions with our coaches, there was obviously hiring coaches that had assumed knowledge but maybe not have been exposed to any athletic development principles. So we kind of had to put it on paper and think of ways that we can put something in front of you and you can look at it and you know exactly what you're doing and when to progress and how to progress it, or use it kind of like as a baseline foundation to know, all right, so if I'm doing a linear drill, for instance, if I'm doing from, like, how can I go from an athletic stance to deceleration work? Obviously, there's a big gap in between the two. So what do I need to do from there and how do I progress that? So we started building kind of like continuums in that sense from all my experience of being exposed to those drills down at Roeville, building kind of like a drill base of knowing the type of drills when to use and how to progress them. And then on top of that, applying that principle, that progression model of how to go and progress through each one. So we put that together into a little syllabus, and then we gave that to our coaches, and then from there we went on to teaching them practically those specific kind of drills that you need to do. Everyone will have their own type of drills and things that they want to focus on, whether it's like lateral agility drills, anything like that. And then just being able to understand that, yeah, you have a drill here, how do I get from point A to point B, and how do I get there properly?
Yeah, awesome. That's fantastic. Can you give us a couple of examples that you might have used this progression model over the last couple of days? I know that you've seen a fair amount of NPL level athletes in at the Performance Centre at Optimus.
Yep.
Did you use any of this progression-based stimulus?
Yeah, so maybe not at Optimus, maybe externally.
Yep.
Still with an NPL athlete coming back from a groin injury. So using probably like a lateral drill progression for him, teaching him how to shuffle again, shuffle properly. So from a simple like predictive movement of a side shuffle, simple T drill, where you're going left and right, so accelerate forward 10 meters, stop, decel in the cone, shuffle 5 meters right, five meters left, back to the middle and the back pedal. So from there we went from very basic predictive movements as far as, yeah, you're gonna go right the first time, second time you're going to go left, to putting coloured cones outside that T drill. So on the right hand side it'll be blue, on the far left side it'll be red, stand in the middle, yep, run forward, red, bang, react to the stimulus, or it could be like even a simple ball drop of a tennis ball to either side, and then react, do the movement skill that you're working on, and then from there progress to like resisted shuffling. So throw some bands around your hips, work against a resistance and build that load capacity. And then from there, like not always you can apply certain aspects to that progression model. So like in that instance, perturbation wise, does not really that relevant, doesn't really apply, but the option is there for certain drills. So
whereas like in, say it was a rugby player, you might add a little bit of contact at
yeah.
the point of decision, or if it was a ice hockey player, you might add same thing, little bit of contact as an external perturbation.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So like if you're an AFL footy player or a rugby player, throw a tackle bag at the end of that
yeah.
shuffle, so, and that, there's your perturbation. So you don't always have to use it as like a very strict framework. It's
yeah.
just there to
it's
know.
It's a framework,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
yeah. And that's what I really love about it, mate. And it's just so good that you can adapt it, but it gives you that base level of like a pyramid of that progression model effectively.
Yeah.
This really interests me because in ACL rehab, we see a significant amount of athletes who will return to linear work. Maybe they'll do a little bit of multi-directional or rotational vectors and resistance of those vectors in general clinics. But what I've found is that this kind of progression model that adds in each individual area, because physio typically look after ACLs in the initial phase, and then they should go to strength and conditioning to do this stuff, that cutoff between physio and S&C, it means that the athlete drops off completely. And so with the reactive movements, and you know, I've done a lot of this around the ACL rehab and the end stages of ACL rehab, but basically you've got two motor system networks that effectively are the nerves that run from your brain through your spinal cord to your muscles in your lower limb. One of them's a conscious nerve pathway, and the other one's a what I call the subconscious nerve pathway. And that subconscious nerve pathway is really the extra pyramidal system. I won't go into too much anatomical detail here. It probably needs some slides or a presentation.
Or a few more long blacks, I reckon.
Maybe a bit early in the morning. Yeah. But in terms of those reactive movements and working those subconscious nerve pathways, that's the most significant aspect of return to play for me as a physio with an ACL interest, you know?
Yeah.
And what you're doing and the way that you're documenting it is absolutely fantastic. And so I feel like creating this ACL rehab pathway by utilizing this progression model is setting a bar much higher than what it currently is. You know, there's obviously, for general clinicians, there's the Melbourne ACL rehab scale, I think, from Mick Hughes and Randy Cooper, which is really good for clinical based aspects, but there's not that much out there that then goes into this predictive, reactive, resisted movements, external perturbations in a systemized way that works those subconscious nerve pathways. So mate, it's absolutely fantastic to have you on and talking about this. You said before around owning your own program at Preston.
Yep.
Tell me, how does that differ rather than slotting in somewhere where someone else has written the program or you've got the syllabus on? Do you feel like you owning your own program allows you to get into more detail and actually really drill down into the little nitty-gritty 1% details of programs?
Definitely, mate. Definitely. I think, and also, it's kind of cheesy calling myself head of performance. I am, but to add a bit of justification to that, so it's me there as S&C and head of performance, and Dan is there as head physio and medical, but then we also run an intern program. So at the moment, we have like an actual strength conditioning coordinator for our under 20s as well. So he's there working. And we got, I think, probably close to 6 to 8 interns, so both physio and sports science.
Fantastic.
So we do run a fair big performance department, especially for that level. So I don't think many NPL clubs have like an S&C, let alone a performance department with 8 interns. So we focus majority on those interns and upskilling them through PD sessions. And it's not just, sometimes they get bored and I tell them, you're bored because I don't want you packing up cones and doing the stuff that me and Dan did many, many years. So the reason why you're bored is we want to focus in and focus on that important stuff that we want to get you industry ready. So when you come out of this internship, you know, and you get you get offered a position as S&C or a physio at a club, you know exactly what to do from day one. It's not, oh yeah, I spent a year at this club, all I did was fill water bottles and pick up cones and didn't really learn much, and I was just observing. Now we throw them in the deep end a few times, they learn from it, and thankfully from last year's program, obviously we've progressed one intern who's now taken on his own program for the under 20s.
Fantastic.
So he's doing a great job there as well, Declan. But owning your own program is definitely different, because I kind of like the accountability and the responsibility falls back on you if something goes wrong. I love that responsibility. Obviously, if you change something, you need to factor in what's going to happen coming out of that. So you add in a specific element to your program and you come about, you start getting soft tissues out of it, it's going to keep you up at night. So I kind of love that pressure of being on the ball and improving that 1%. And I think last year we had a really good year. I think we had like a 98% play availability rate.
Wow, that's from there. That is incredible.
Yeah, so which definitely gave our coaches a headache, but a good headache in squad selection, and I'm assuming put us in a very good spot to win that premiership that we won last year. From that, this year I think it's going to be harder because we've had that kind of baseline to ceiling progression and improvement, whereas now it is starting to just improve that 1%. So from this year on, it is definitely harder. I'm finding it harder to knuckle down, and do we need to change certain aspects? Should we keep certain things? We did definitely change things from last year, especially a lot of the loads, the training loads focused in. We got brand new units from Catapult as well, so we had to change kind of that aspect, which I'll pick your brain about that GPS stuff.
I think that's another whole podcast.
Yeah.
I'd love to
I think it would be a
good discussion around that, and we'll probably schedule an hour for
from there. So, but yeah, I absolutely love it, mate. Love it down there at Preston, and hopefully have a good, successful season as well.
Awesome. Now, any advice for younger students that might be graduating from their physio degree or their S&C degree, looking to go down a similar pathway around sport, high performance, what advice would you give to them that you wish you had known in, say, your first or your second year?
Definitely go out there, seek opportunities. I think I did mine a bit different, where I did do little kind of internships and stuff like that during my undergrad, but never really dug deep and dug in, got the most out of them. Even if you're in first year, second year, don't wait for your career advisor to come tap you on the shoulder and be like, you need to do 20 hours placement for this course. Go out, throw a resume together, or go out, just talk to people, seek opportunities. The more you coach, the more you learn. So I feel like the best time to do it, go out to like semi-professional Division 3, Division 4 leagues, because if you're going to make mistakes, that's when you're going to learn from them in those leagues, because it's definitely 10 times better than going to an AFL club and just watching and not being able to do anything.
Picking up cones and
literally learning from watching someone isn't the best. Whereas if you're actively doing it and you're prescribing programs and coaching physically, I think you definitely come out of that much better.
Excellent, mate. And where can people find you? Social media, Instagram?
Yeah, so recently just built an Instagram, so that's why I don't have that many followers, but hopefully that'll increase. So Coach Joey Wanuch, that's on Instagram. Also on the Optimus website, and that's about it, to be honest.
Awesome, mate. Well, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. We'll definitely have you on a future podcast. We'll discuss GPS units, and thank you so much for taking us through that progression-based
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me on.
Cheers, pleasure. Mate.